Oh God. Oh my God.
Hey, I'm gonna point this out because nobody else has. I'm the only person here not wearing glasses.
Oh yeah,
I got LASIK on Friday.
Did you really?
I did.
Oh hell yeah!
2 days out, it's weird.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
How often do you touch your face now? Just like trying to touch like your
put
glasses.
Your glasses back up.
I have this morning getting out of bed, I reached for my glasses.
Yeah. Okay.
And then classic. When I was like, you know, splashing water on my face first thing this morning, I did a on my eyes and immediately regretted it.
Oh yeah.
That would drive me insane. As someone who constantly looks for the glasses they are currently wearing, mm-hmm. not having glasses would drive me insane.
I think about it fairly often. Like, it would be interesting, but I've had glasses for so fucking long.
I got mine when I was 8.
Yeah, you beat me.
Second grade.
Yeah.
That's 7.
Yeah, that's when I got it.
3rd.
All I know about John's illustrious backstory is you had glasses when you were 8 and you used to be a bodybuilder. I am imagining a tiny buff child now with glasses.
Little buff boys.
Oh, I was fat. I graduated high school at 320.
Damn.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't remember when that
was.
They held
at bodybuilding, I was 198 and a quarter.
Wow. Because like
I just barely made weight.
Wow. God, that's crazy.
I had to go pee to make weight. Shit you not.
Empty that bladder out. Ooh, we got it. Couple more ounces off. Done.
There was dudes spitting in cups.
That's so wild.
Well, that was a weird tangent. Sorry. Yeah.
No, that's okay. That's kind of what our bread and butter is. So,
yeah. Oh, the interesting thing is I've had moments walking around the house and realize I'm not wearing my glasses and then think, oh, I can't see. And then a half second later being like, oh, actually, I can.
That is like weird cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, it's been real odd because I'm used to, you know, hey, if I don't have my glasses on, I can't see.
Right.
That's right.
I think I'd have to get like if I got LASIK and like I could see normally, I'd have to get like glasses just for
style,
like just style and normality. Like, I don't think
I'm thinking about being that guy that wears like just the tiny bit shaded glasses all the time.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I mean, it would go with your whole hat vibe.
Yeah,
it's true.
And the low pony that I've got going now too.
Yeah.
So tiny bit shaded. You're just going to live like at all times.
Just a little yellow
in a world where like you're the guy with transitions who just came inside.
No, not that dark. I'm thinking more like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. Mm-hmm. That kind of vibe.
That's not a vibe a lot of people look
seek
for.
Yeah.
It's kind of a scummy guy.
Looks aren't everything.
Yeah, it's what's in your heart, Nick. So you watch these movies.
This morning. I set an alarm to get up and watch these this morning because I forgot about it until about Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were throwing a Friendsgiving, so I had zero time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're fresh in your bloodstream.
Yeah. Don't regret it, honestly.
Okay, there you go.
Sipping coffee.
Welcome back to Cage Match, Colin Roundabout. We're meeting Nicolas Cage. Since Peter's already gotten started before you've even announced the films, this week we're kind of going off book and... Well, not really. We've discussed movies that Nicolas Cage is barely in. And this week we're discussing movies that he's not in. We're doing the Grindhouse films, Death Proof and Planet Terror.
Yep. And the little trailers that come along with it, which is where we do get Nick Cage. This is maybe the least Nick Cage screen time we've had ever, though, right?
I would argue, it's still more Nick Cage acting than Dazed and Confused.
You're welcome. Now you have to leave that in for continuity.
I am going
to
leave it in.
Yeah.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where he's there, but says nothing.
He at least makes some faces in that one that were okay.
He makes faces. He makes a face in this one.
He makes racist faces in this.
Racist faces.
Yes, in the great Rob Zombie trailer for Werewolf Women of the SS, Nicolas Cage plays Fu Manchu.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice long fake mustache.
Did any of you find the Rob Zombie interview where he discusses how this happened?
No,
but I wish I had.
Yeah.
So in a short little interview with Rob Zombie, he was talking about how he's like, so I was doing this thing and you know, I never ask my friends like for favors to be in my thing, but like, you know, you don't know if you don't ask. So I asked Nick, like, hey, do you want to be like the head Nazi in this thing? And he's like, no, man, I can't be a Nazi. So I was just like, fuck, I want Nick Cage in this. So I just made up on the spot. Do you want to be Fu Manchu? And Nick Cage is like, yeah, I'll do that. There was Nazi, no Fu Manchu no in the script. There was no Fu Manchu. I just said it. And apparently that was less problematic than a Nazi.
Yeah.
And that was essentially the interview. And that's why Fu Manchu's in that trailer.
This is a tough question now. So who wants to be Fu Manchu for the poster art?
Not it.
Oh, man. 100% it.
Yeah, all right. You could be one of the two fawning women at his feet.
It's Fu Manchu or Nazi. Those are your choices today. And Peter's going to do a really good job on the Nazi photo.
Really get your likeness in there.
Yeah. I don't know that I need this in my life. Yeah.
Well, we had a good run, Sean.
Did we?
I don't know. We had a run. And the runs.
Technically, we've just discussed the entirety of Nick Cage's role in these films, so we'll see you next week. Peter, hit us with that outro.
Yeah, right. Okay, but so he gives us a laugh is all.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's pretty much just like a turn and a laugh, and I think he says
I thought there
something.
Was one line.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very brief. I don't know what he actually says.
Also, I did not have this trailer in either of the movies I watched. I had to find it on YouTube. And even then, because there are tits in it, all I could find is a camcorder from a theater version of it.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you got to watch a handy cam version of...
Which is probably the best
that's
way
maybe
to
the best representation. Yeah.
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 Okay, I like that.
The most authentic way.
Right.
Machete is awesome.
Great. Yeah.
Machete made it.
Did you ever see the actual movies?
No, but yes. I want to now.
I know.
No, you don't. It's not bad.
No.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
I feel like
that looked awesome.
They were hitting something fun with that. And I guess Robert Rodriguez had had him in mind for like a really long time to do a Machete movie and then was like, I mean, we'll just prime the pump with this sucker.
Yeah.
It was
test
fun
the
as
waters
hell.
Out.
I mean, we're going to get in. I mean, I'm going to get into it later as to whether or not I feel this like the Rodriguez like grindhouse films work, but.
Spoiler.
Yeah, that tone kind of answers the whether you think.
I object.
I mean,
to the question.
You know, I have my opinions, but I think it works as a sizzle reel. I don't know that it works as a 90-minute joke, as most jokes don't work as a 90-minute. You know, past five.
How long are these podcasts?
Like an episode runtime? I mean, it just depends. When we were doing the double features in the past, we would get anywhere from 55 minutes to close to an hour and a half was like our biggest.
90 minutes, you say?
Yeah, 90 minutes indeed.
But we're
and the
full jokes
didn't work. It's all been downhill since Paradictyl.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That was an early one, too. So let's see. The other one was the Edgar Wright one, Don't.
Which,
I kind of liked that. In a stupid way. But yeah, it made me laugh in a dumb way.
Oh, I missed that one too. That one I actually enjoyed. That one, I forgot about that trailer.
There's also the Eli Roth one.
Yeah, the Thanksgiving one.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I wanted to see that. Especially in fucking the turkey at the
end. Fucking the turkey, yeah. There were some weird visuals in that. Eli Roth's a weird dude.
He's a very weird guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the grandma trussed up as the turkey in the end.
Yep.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Gross and hot.
Yeah.
It took me a second to realize what was going on there because it doesn't show it for very long.
Oh, as a connoisseur of grandma bodies, I knew right away.
We know what category Nick goes for.
God, gross. I think it was kind of cool, and I'm sort of sad in the state of affairs of cinema and movie theaters that something like this just probably can't exist again. It's like, the concept is just like incredibly low budget, pretty fast to produce movies that, you know, mostly exploitation style movies and, you know, lots of sword fight movies, martial arts movies kind of fit in that category.
It's just low budget action, horror and exploitation films.
Yeah.
Shocking kind of by definition, I guess, or by trying to be.
By trying to be usually, I think.
Like more modern things you could point out would be like trauma films.
Right.
They're very much in that vein, but they just don't get a theatrical release. So it hits different.
But I liked this idea that you had theaters that like kind of had to fill time, right? So it's like, what are you doing between all these blockbusters? It's like, okay, I don't know. It's like public access, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's some horrible shit on public access, and there's some kind of amazing shit that you find. And this, I'm sure, falls into both of those buckets. But you know, it's kind of a cool idea in general, just being able to go to a movie theater and watch like, I don't know, an all-nighter of like absolute nonsense, like. That sounds kind of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, like most things, it all got ruined by capitalism and studios wanting to like monopolize every screen all the time, rather than, you don't get indie stuff anymore because no one will like pay for it. Because
you guys watch The Studio?
I haven't seen it
on Apple TV. Yeah. Hey, super good.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah. Amazing. Can't recommend it enough. But they talk about a lot of that actually, of like, because first episode, spoiler alert, half the season is about them having to make a Kool-Aid Man movie and like fucking hating it and trying to figure out, you know, how to make it decent and stuff. And the exact argument you're talking about of making like auteur films versus having to make these blockbusters that pay for the auteur films.
Right.
Well, time was, you know, studios would just produce things and would look at the overall, how much they made versus each individual project. Some projects would do worse, some projects would do better, but stuff would get produced and, you know, it would all come out in the wash as a whole. But now each film needs to make so much money. Yeah.
It's the same thing that's happening with video games too, you know, where it's like everything has to be these AAA releases.
Ultimately for the people at the top who don't like
video
actually,
games.
Yeah. Well, who don't make art, who aren't involved in that. They're just there to make money.
Yeah, it's opportunity cost, right? It's like, hey, if I get a loan for $1 billion, I want to make as much possible money off that $1 billion.
Right.
So fuck the auteur films. I don't care.
Yeah.
You're right. It's pure money.
It's just money. Yeah. It's just a bummer though, you know. Like it makes me we should make a fucking Grindhouse film. Let's do it.
We should. We might as well.
We could.
We might as well. We could. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason we couldn't. We can
show the beacon.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that keeps us from doing it is time.
Oh, I was going to say skill and
no,
you don't need skill.
That's unnecessary. I'm really so
time is right. You're right.
In the vein of that, like, are you guys excited for Anaconda?
Yes.
Friends who loved a movie so much they wanted to remake it. It is.
It's kind of like, I do sort of think that they're going to have a better time with it than the original one, you know, and it could be fun. You know, that kind of shit is enjoyable when people who make a thing have fun doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's not like,
I mean, we are talking about the same Jack Black film, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you guys talking about? What's happening? Jack Black's remaking Anaconda?
No, it's a movie called Anaconda. And it's, the premise is, these friends really loved the movie Anaconda as kids. Because, I mean, have you ever seen that movie?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And they just kind of like decide, hey, we have to make this film. So they just try to do a shot for shot remake of it, but they have zero budget, zero skill. And it's a dumb movie. Looks dumb. It just should be okay.
Great. I'd see that.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to talk about.
I mean, the premise also being that, to cut costs, they just get a giant snake who then the like remake of Anaconda just becomes them in an Anaconda situation.
Yeah.
Oh, it's sort of like The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It becomes the action. I'm your guest, John.
Yeah. All right. Who are you, Sean?
No, I mean, that's actually a good segue into kind of my main issue with these two films in terms of like grindhouse cinema. It's just like, can you make Artur like low budget like films within the studio system? Or are we just, you know, I don't think these movies go far enough to be considered parody, but because they're made within the system, I don't know if they're made with enough. Integrity is the wrong word, but like,
yeah, they just come off a little inauthentic.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
And because I'm the anal retentive fuck I am, the film grain over it, I could see where it loops and like where the digital like streaks were coming in, and that annoyed me.
Yeah, I hated that
the entire fucking time.
Yeah,
it was unnecessary.
Yeah, you don't need to do that shit. Well, and also in Death Proof, it kind of like came and went. too. Like,
yeah, I was noticing that.
It was at the beginning. There was a midsection where it had none, and then at the end, maybe it was back again. I don't remember exactly the sequence, but
Who is the DP for that?
They were their own DP.
I was gonna say, I knew I saw that Robert Rodriguez was his own.
Yeah, and so was Tarantino.
That tracks.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, fine. I like the idea of them trying to kick the tires on different aspects, but I think to varying degrees of success.
Yeah. I really wish Quentin Tarantino would stop trying to act.
Oh, he's so fucking bad.
He's bad. He's even bad in Pulp Fiction, and that's probably his best, you know.
Yeah.
Well, wait,
I kind of just wish Tarantino would go away at this point. I'm just on the whole.
Who?
Have you
Tarantino?
I just kind of wish he'd go away on the whole right now. Have you heard his most recent like tirade of interviews and him just kind of shitting on everybody he fucking can?
Yeah.
I mean, he's always been sort of that way.
Yeah.
Abrasive. It's just at the point now where he's just throwing names out of people he doesn't like. Like, he's not even asked about things. He's just like, I fucking hate Owen Wilson. People are like, why? He's like, I don't like the way he acts. It's like, nobody asked you.
Yeah, fair enough.
I've met people like that.
Yeah. I don't like his face. Well, I actually don't like Owen Wilson's face, but I do like him.
He's very charming.
Yeah.
He seems like kind of a cool guy, honestly.
He grew on me.
Wow.
Luke Wilson, however, not a fan.
Insufferable brother.
Yeah.
Nepo brother.
Nepo brother, right. Owen's got all the talent.
Yep.
Bottle rocket, baby. Okay, so wait. Who are you, Sean?
Nick. I'm Nick.
Oh, hey. Peter. We're still doing the intro. I'm your host, Sean, with my co-host.
I've done my part.
And our producer, Peter. Hello. And our guest,
John. I said it like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's good. This is going to be perfect.
Yeah.
No edit Peter will fix episode. Nope.
You know, honestly, I haven't listened to an episode in like 2 years, so
I
don't know. I don't know if any of this stuff actually ever makes it to air anymore.
We actually don't even put anything out anymore. It's like in a Wet Hot American Summer when it like pans down from the kid doing the radio announcements and it just shows everything unplugged.
Yep.
I've never actually seen that movie.
It's pretty fun.
Oh, it's terrific.
John, do you want to run through the plot of Planet Terror?
Yeah, I can try to do that. there's not a lot. It's basically they wanted to make a generic zombie movie with a lot of gore and like stuff. But there is a little bit of a plot. I'm thinking back. I'm trying to debate. Do I go with chronological order? Let's do that.
Sure. I mean, so that's often a way to tell a tale.
Well, I mean, like, so I'm SEAL Team Bruce Willis, finds Osama, shoots him twice and his laptop once.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's at the time, that's when they find the like gas stuff.
DC-2.
Right? Yeah. Whatever. Which everybody seems to know exactly what that is. I don't. Is it a real thing?
No.
It can't be.
No, I think it's just something that they didn't need to explain because it is in that world.
Yeah. Dick Chemical 2. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Dick Chemical 2.
Like it would feel weird to give exposition about something like that in that
world. It makes you mutate if you don't breathe more of it.
Boom.
Yeah, that's breathe the thing is you need a little bit of it. So like, I don't know, it's sort of a Bane situation because if they take their masks off, they start, you know, getting all boily and then eventually seems like your brain gets taken over and you kind of just go zombie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But fast zombie and strong zombie.
Right. Real bubbly zombies, though.
Yeah.
I want to see weak zombie, like malnourished zombie movie where like they don't really like catch you or anything. They just kind of shuffle at you and like can barely get their arms up, but you could like push them over.
My musculature is rotting away.
They had those in The Walking Dead, actually. They were like the real malnourished ones and stuff. They get like real weak and shit, and then they like chain them up.
Perfect. Yeah, I want to live in
28
that
days later, too.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh, we haven't seen that one yet.
28 days later?
Oh, wait, no.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. What did I say?
You said days. I was thinking 28 years later.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen
that one yet.
Likewise. And you haven't gone to the Bone Temple? That's the other one.
Oh, okay. No, I guess not.
Yeah. You haven't been to the Bone Temple?
Is that a different film than 28 years later? Or I thought that was the subtitle.
I think it is a different film. I am not entirely sure and don't care.
I'm so confused by the 28 universe.
Mm.
the movie really starts with Rose McGowan. Mm-hmm. And we should probably talk about the whole brought to you by the Weinstein Company. This is Rose McGowan.
Not the Weinstein Company, brought to you by your friends.
At
the Weinstein Company.
I heard that and I just went, oh.
Yeah. And then I realized it was Rose McGowan and I was like, oh no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sad anyway. Now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's not a stripper. She's a go-go dancer, mm-hmm. which
go-go, not cry-cry.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you. Yeah, that was one of the lines that I actually wrote down. Okay. We were talking and about I was writing down good lines and then I just gave up because there was so many of them. There's a lot of like witty one-liners in this.
Especially at the beginning. Like, I feel like it hits like a lot hard.
Oh, yeah. They got all their best writing out.
Yeah. And then they're like, now it's just going to be like zombie heads popping. And then occasionally we'll give you another good quip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So she leaves. She gets bumped into a trash can and cuts her leg. And then she goes to a barbecue joint called the Bone Shack. Tight name.
Yeah. My favorite is later when it's very on fire and all you see is the barbecue sign. I was like, spot on.
Yeah. Art. Masterpiece.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so we kind of forgot one part. So Bruce Willis wants all the DC2.
Right. From the weird drug dealer.
Yeah. Naveen Andrews, the scientist.
Yeah.
Who also has the weird ball jar. And I just did not want to miss the ball jar.
I was going to get to that.
The most 80s scientist ever, including the blazer with the rolled up sleeves and the headband.
Yeah. That was a pretty good look.
Why did he have the ball jar? Why was that a thing?
Well, he also had special...
He liked to collect balls.
Yeah, when you're a bad guy, you like to cut off balls. And he had the knife and the cool scissors for it.
He had the cool like ball tools. What was...
He did have cool ball tools.
What was the middle part of the ball scissors for?
I think just an anchor point.
It was like a scissor with like a knife in the middle.
Hmm.
I think you just get that into the taint and then it...
Oh, I thought it was maybe as a sounding situation.
Oh.
It goes up the middle.
Ooh. Mm.
I don't know if I like that either.
I don't like any of this.
Maybe it's there, like it's not sharp or anything. It's just there in the center to split the balls. So that way you get one ball around either side. So when it cuts.
Oh,
that makes more sense.
That does make sense.
You can watch them individually and, you know, maybe it protects the ball, the gonad.
Yeah. I'll say this, though, when they do cut off someone's balls, they come out one at a time. They throw one over their shoulder and then the other comes later.
Yeah.
So.
Was that with the scissors or was that when he had his
That was the
his
scissors. Like hook knife. Yeah, I think it was the scissors. But yeah, and then like immediately the hubris of having a ball jar smashes on the ground. He ends up getting a face full of balls.
Yeah.
But then is just stuffing them in his pocket.
Like, he's like, no, not my balls.
The stuffing the balls in his pocket was probably one of the funniest things in this film.
Incredible, incredible scene. Like, I don't even think Naveen Andrews is a great actor, but I was just like, this is amazing. This is amazing. Like, goopy ball on your face, shuttling him in your pockets, running away.
He does have so my good. Favorite. He does have my favorite on-screen death in this film.
You know, thinking back to Con Air and like having to make a fake Dave Chappelle, I was also really laughing at the idea of having to make a fake Naveen Andrews like exploded head doll like that, because it does look like him just blown the fuck up.
The actual practical effects for like the gore and like the exploding heads and like torsos. Best part of this film.
So Cherry Darling gets to the Bone Shack, which really does sound like a porno.
Mm-hmm.
And meets her ex-boyfriend,
El Rey,
played by Freddie Rodriguez,
who, based on the context clues, is also a former
badass
army soldier. Yeah.
But he's really good at twirling guns.
Okay,
that boy's got the devil in him. I love the scene where he gets the guns and they're like, he's showing off his cool gun tricks and his cool gun twirls, but they have to keep cutting, like the shot.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it look like it's a far lower budget film.
Yeah.
Like, which is great.
So let's see. So Fergie is there. Fergie is the girlfriend of this doctor and doctor's wife situation. The doctor being some sadist played by Josh Brolin.
Not Kurt Russell. When the movie started, I was like, which one?
Yeah, which movie is this? Is this the Kurt Russell one? They have a kid together who's a dipshit. So, Sean, you saw the actual movie, right? Like the actual two releases, not like the double feature. No. Was there a post-credit scene with the kid?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't see that because the version I had didn't have that.
I didn't see that.
I just rewatched Planet Terror before this, and I like was skipping to the end to see if like the extra trailers were at the end of it. And it's the first time I saw it, whereas it's just the kid on the beach at the end of the film with all of his pets. For our listeners, the kid dies in the film, shoots himself in the face.
Yeah, like definitely dead.
but then at the end of the movie, it's just him on the beach with his animals. So shrug.
I don't like beaches.
What did this in the double feature? What is this?
Whoa. Yeah, hold on, Sean. Hot take.
No, I don't care for beaches.
You don't like beaches?
No.
I also don't really like beaches.
Yeah. Fuck beaches. Beaches suck.
You guys are all anti-beach?
Yeah, and I lived in Florida for 10 years.
Damn. All right, I kind of like beaches. Nah. I'm pro beach.
They're boring.
It's
where dirt meets water.
What was the runtime for this?
This one was 90.
90? Okay. Yeah. So I was wondering if they, you know, maybe cut the double feature for time, but it doesn't sound like it.
I actually looked up the Wikipedia page to this just now because I feel bad for not remembering the plot. And as I'm sitting here reading the plot as we're all talking about it, I don't feel bad for not remembering the plot anymore.
Yeah. It's incredibly stupid.
Remarkably thin.
Yeah.
There's barely a plot. Cherry Darlene, Rose McGowan gets her and the El Rey get attacked by zombies. She gets her leg ripped off.
Torn off. Right. He gets arrested because the cops don't like him.
Mexican. They go to the hospital. Yeah.
I mean,
the sheriff played by the third best Bean, Michael Bean. Yeah,
Michael Bean.
Third to Sean Bean, best Bean, and second best Bean, Mr. Bean.
Yep.
Sean, Mr. Michael. That's how it goes.
Holy shit. So I went to Rachel's Teatro Zanzani show last night and they had a character named Mr. Pee-Pee. Basically was a Mr. Bean type person, you know, sort of walking around and making strange sounds that are almost like talking. But he did this thing where he juggled three ping pong balls with his mouth. That was incredible.
Wow.
It was really good.
Did you get his number?
Yeah, man.
Fuck yeah. Let's throw up.
We got at least three balls right here.
Yes. I got a whole bag of whole bag of balls.
Call Naveen Andrews.
A weirdly fancy jar for your balls.
Yes.
It looked like the thing that in The Rock that they kept the balls in. Like,
I think that was also called DC2.
Well, when you
it wasn't.
When you have so many balls that you want to display, you really splurge on your ball container.
Jar.
I want it to be one of those things where like it has, you put a light bulb in the bottom of it and just sort of like a lava lamp, eventually they start moving faster.
Balls just
you gotta warm up though.
The balls bit reminded me of the Bruce Willis scenes for some reason. Is Bruce Willis actually in this movie with anybody, or is he just shot separately?
I think he might be shot separately. I don't think he's ever actually on screen at the same time with anybody. I mean, maybe with some like background actors running around.
Right. There would be people standing behind him or something. But
yeah. Okay. So yeah, plot line. Let's see. Let's speed run this. So Cherry Darling loses her leg. The doctors are all at the hospital. Lady doctor escapes from bad husband doctor after Fergie is found with no brain.
Yeah. She leaps right out of the window.
Yeah. That's
right. Pretty cool. Pretty onto a bunch of trash.
Go ahead.
When she opens up the door and like she can't, I forgot about arms? That. Like when I first, from like initial watching, and then the other day, it was just like, when she shoves her hand down in there and like it slips and falls.
Oh God.
Breaks her wrist.
Yeah. Forgot about that.
That's the part of this film that I always forget about and hate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gets a reaction.
Yeah. Like after she gets drugged up, she loses like, you know, fine muscle control in her hand. So there's a lot of like flopping around to do stuff. She tries to open the door by like sticking her hand in the handle and like hitting the latch with her foot.
What else? I mean, what, there's nothing important in this movie. It's like, it's incredibly stupid.
No. So they patch up Cherry's leg at the hospital, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason at the bottom, they put in this giant, well, they put in that giant metal
square
block.
Yeah.
Stud.
Yeah. For future mounting.
They give her like a Barrett arm from Final Fantasy VII.
That comes back to play.
Yeah, sure does. And then jam a table leg on it, which works somehow.
No, the hospital didn't do that.
They
were a little more delicate about the situation.
Them escaping from the hospital is one of my favorite scenes. Just Rose McGowan, like, on the fake leg, just like stumbling around, is done so well.
And El Rey just like fucking working those knives.
Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. With the butterfly knives.
Yeah,
he never misses.
Yeah, it was a good line.
Escaping from the hospital with the cops, they get back to the Bone Shack, and we get the history behind Cherry Darling and El Rey. Cut to sex scene, cut to film burning away and scene missing, sorry, and then other movie. Or just, we're going to just skip all the boring parts and just get to the action.
They spent so much time on that sex scene too. It's like really luxuriating in it. It was like, all right, I understand what's going on here, but like, come on.
Yeah.
We're 90 minute a little movie. Bit.
Yeah. It's no Big Top Pee Wee makeout scene, but.
But what is?
This movie does one thing right that I do absolutely love from this type of cinema. Having just rewatched the original Highlander, which I'd put as like a high budget grindhouse film in a lot of ways. The monster, enemy, whatever, like a bad thing coming just out of the periphery of everyone there and nobody saw it. Like when the cop's going to give the deputy his ring and the zombie like jumps out of just to the right of the camera. And nobody saw him.
Nobody notices it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But I feel like that kind of shit's intentional in this, right? Like totally. It's very purposefully dumb, right?
Yeah. Now, like I said, I just rewatched Highlander, and every like fight scene is Clancy Brown coming just slightly to the left. Chris Lambert just like coming, just they've been having like a 5-minute conversation and Clancy Brown just like jumps out of just to the left and no one saw him there.
Well, he is blind.
Yeah, well, it makes sense when you realize Chris Lambert is legally blind.
Plotline stuff, John. Anything else that you feel like you need to talk about?
No, it's just there's a lot of badass action scenes. McGowan / Cherry eventually replaces Table Leg with a gun.
Grenade launcher.
Yeah, gun. Ray does that. I don't remember what it is. It's that cool gun that's got like...
Yeah, like an M16 or whatever. Like
with
whatever.
It's got launcher.
A grenade launcher on it. It also has a bayonet, but the blade doesn't stick past the barrel. So why?
Because it looks cool.
For chopping.
Yeah, it's but only also, for chopping.
Also, from the school of action movie, John Woo action movies where no one has to reload. At the end of this film, she's like grenade launching herself over walls and shit.
I was so hoping that was going to happen at some point, and then it did. And I worth it.
It's like stand up in the movie theater clapping. You're like, hell yeah, this is for me.
Yeah, the rocket jump's great.
As I'm watching this film, and I'm kind of like, debating whether or not, genre picture works. Like, is this a spoof? Is it not? Is it too serious? Is it like going far enough? And it's only this last like 10 minutes of the film when it gets to just this craziness. I'm like, this is what this entire movie should have been. We shouldn't have been building up to this. We should have just started at 10 and kept going.
I don't know.
I thought it was fun nonsense. I really enjoyed this. So I got up early this morning and started watching it with headphones on. And then Marcy got up about 45 minutes and she, had a cup of coffee and sat down and started watching it with me. And she's like, this is awesome. Like, it's just a fun stupid watch.
Yeah, they're stupid bad movies, which is kind of the hallmark of the genre that they're working off of. And as like actual grindhouse films, I don't think they're really, well, I mean, they can't really be actual grindhouse films. $30 million budget.
Yeah, exactly. By two massive, at the time, superstar directors.
Yeah, but as films of like, I saw and I like these films. Clearly too much money and too much talent can make it like just look inauthentic. But it feels like these directors know the style and they're just having a lot of fun with it. I enjoy watching both of these movies. I liked the effects a lot in Planet Terror.
The comedy for me was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just a fun, dorky little watch. You're not going to be a better person for watching it.
You might be a worse person.
Fuck no.
Probably not a worse person.
I watched the two movies backwards because I had remembered liking Death Proof the first time I saw this in theaters back in 2007. And I was like, I'm going to start there. And I wish I hadn't. Well, maybe I'm glad that I did. But I ended up liking Planet Terror a lot more than I remembered because it was like very dumb. And it was the right kind of dumb for me at my age right now, maybe.
Like, so I was, as I was watching this, or as I was watching Death Proof, I was like, these movies should have been in reverse order. I feel like I would have been much more into the kind of slowish burn of Death Proof at the beginning, whereas coming off of Planet Terror, I was like, it's kind of boring.
I think that was probably an intentional. Well, my understanding is the way this originally happened was Robert Rodriguez was just like, I got this fun schlocky idea for like a grindhouse style film that he was trying to sell to Tarantino to like help produce. And Tarantino's like, that's great, I'll make one too. And Tarantino just kind of like glommed onto this as a project and probably helped get some funding for it overall.
I don't know. Rodriguez had all that Spy Kids money.
And terms
in
of
07?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah, never mind.
But in terms of like commercials and advertising this film, I don't think that if they went Death Proof forward, because I remember the original ad campaign was all Planet Terror and like some just shots of like car chases from Death Proof. But I think if they went Death Proof forward, this wouldn't have gotten as much buzz around it in the mid-aughts or interest. I
mean, the main thing I remember from the advertising was gun leg.
Yeah.
And I was exactly 17 when this came out. Perfect age
for gun leg.
For gun leg. Never saw it.
Yeah. Interesting. Now. Yeah.
Well, I remember when this came out because I did see it in theaters with friends like opening night and thoroughly enjoyed it. I think having the shorter of the two, because the Tarantino film's 2 hours. I think if you would have gone into that, then there was a break. I think people might have walked. But I remember after seeing it, loving it when I originally saw it and like going to college, talking to just average people about the film. And they're like, a double feature. I don't know if I could sit in a theater that long. I'm like, you've watched all of the Lord of the Rings films in the theater. You could have sat through this. It's not that bad.
Too long. You get a fucking intermission. I love an intermission.
Yeah. Well, I went to see The Hateful Eight. So Quentin Tarantino did The Hateful Eight, and that was on some fancy film, whatever. And they only showed it in that fancy film in like a dozen, maybe two dozen theaters around the country. And one of them was near me in Florida, and I actually went and did it. And they did that whole shtick. There was like a solid 15, 20 minute intermission in the middle because it's a long movie.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you got like this big handout thing. It was a whole extra deal.
Huh.
But yeah, intermission's kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, as a person who definitely has to pee every movie somewhere in the middle, like, I am pro intermission.
Well, I will say, when this movie came out, there was no intermission.
It's the advantage of watching movies at home.
Yeah, just pee on the couch then. You're right.
Yeah, the trailers exist not as an intermission, but as just a transitionary.
Yeah. Right. And I remember my friends and I went into the midnight show of this, so we didn't get home till like almost 4 a.m.
Yeah. okay, well, let's switch to Death Proof then, and we can talk about Tarantino's love of feet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Feet on display.
It's so egregious in this film.
Well, it's in a lot of his shit. I remember
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
I know, and I've never paid that much attention to it until I knew about it, and then the first shot of this film is just bare feet.
Well, so Maya Hawke was getting interviewed, and her mom's Uma Thurman. And her mom, because Maya Hawke did something with Tarantino, I can't remember. I think it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She's one of the characters in there. And her only advice to her daughter was, keep your shoes on. pervy ass Tarantino.
I enjoy this film more personally. So how do we want to discuss this movie? Because technically, I feel like it's two movies.
Well, I mean, that's a good point.
Sort of.
I mean, there's sort of the invincible version of Stuntman Mike, and then there's the other.
there's the initial with Jungle Julia, the girls' night at a bar, and there's this creepy Kurt Russell character, Stuntman Mike, who's just kind of hovering around all night, and then
yet another Rose McGowan.
At the end of the film, serial killer, but uses his car as a murder weapon. Nice little concept, nice slow burn, a lot of fun. It's done in the same grindhouse effect as Planet Terror. It's got the grain filter. Technically takes place in the same universe because we see the hospital, the sheriff, and the doctor. Jungle Julia gets a shout out in Planet Terror.
Yeah, which was also interesting because they say, like, you know, rest in peace, Jungle Julia in Planet Terror, which obviously doesn't mean jack shit to you at that time if you're watching it in sequence. But I thought, again, if these were flipped movies, you would get more of that. But, you know, whatever. I guess the world is ruined at the end of. No, so that makes even more sense. The world is ruined at the end of Planet Terror. Yeah, exactly.
So we have that. And and apparently Planet Terror takes place in Austin, if this is the case. But then we have, you know, we have that great, like, murder scene where Kurt Russell, like, drives through the car and we see each girl's death in the car get more and more gruesome with each death.
What was the deal with the cigarette lighter? Because he pulls his cigarette.
That's the headlights. In old cars, your headlights were a little pole thingy.
Before my time.
And then hard cut from there. And then we go to the hospital scene. Then we get a hard cut to just a Tarantino film. It starts off in black and white. They lose the grain filter. And it's just 14 months later, I think, is the time transition. But it's another movie. And outside of crazy guy in a car, there's no connection.
Yeah, I never really... Yeah, you're right. It was super disconnected. I never understood the motivation. Like, yeah, you know, serial killer, whatever. Like, you need to have a little bit of a motivation.
Yeah, it's more than, yeah, find people who have, like, hot cars or something that you're like, no, I'm the better. I'm the better driver. Yeah. You know, whatever it might be. But it just seemed like sort of random because it was Jungle Julia, Butterfly, who also was a dancer, I think. Maybe. I can't remember. Two random friends of theirs. And Yeah, I don't know. I feel bad for Butterfly. She got fucked.
Yeah. Well, there's connections. Yeah. You know, it's groups of girls, four girls each time.
Yeah.
One of them at least has to be black.
It's true.
One of them has to be from somewhere else because they have an accent. New York.
Kiwi,
and
not Australian.
Yeah.
I found myself getting annoyed by a lot of the extended lingering shots. Not just the feet, but like when Kurt Russell's like taking photos of the second group of girls, coming out of the airport, and we just have like 90 seconds, 2 minutes of just like shutter shots and stuff. Like, we get it. He's creepy. Move on. This movie's 2 hours long. I don't need this.
It's certainly not 2 minutes.
It's over a minute.
Okay.
I like the concept, the idea of a stuntman with a death-proof car using that to go kill people. That sounds super cool, but like the movie just did not pay off on that at all.
No,
it set it up and then just totally fucked it over. Not to say that the ending isn't still kind of fun, but they just feel disconnected. I did not like this nearly as much as I liked Planet Terror. And I think part of it was because of the order, like I was talking about earlier, is like Planet Terror is just like constant action, one-liners, like real fun, and then you switch to this and it's more of a slow burn before you get to any real like action or anything. And it just doesn't have enough to really like pull you in, or at least me.
Yeah, it's a long burn to even get to the first kill scene, and then, you know, all these people that you've been like trying to pay attention to as characters get fucking definitely murdered in gruesome ways. Butterfly's face gets tired off.
But I mean, it works as a short little slasher horror film. It's like, because each movie is about 60, each half is about 60 minutes. And it works where you have the killer kind of like, you get to know him. Like, he seems like a nice enough guy, a little creepy, a little, you know, but
a little intense.
And then you get to the murderizing. And then the second half isn't about him at all. And he's barely, the only association is he shows up at the end. Like, he sees the girls at the beginning and then he shows up at the end, but there's not the same build to it, to his attack on them.
Yeah, that second one definitely doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it's a love letter to old Hollywood stunt driving. The Australian chick is a stunt woman.
New Zealand.
They did all that stuff. New Zealand.
They specifically call that out.
Yeah.
That's, you know, so it's a love letter to that. And that part's great, but it's just an excuse to have that chase sequence without having an actual plot.
Yeah. I will say this. The chase sequence is pretty solid.
Pretty good.
Like, I really enjoyed them as chase sequences.
Yeah, I did like that. I also liked the transition from Stuntman Mike being this sort of like invulnerable asshole, like force to getting shot and being like a super bitch baby.
Yeah. Like squealing almost. Yeah.
The beatdown he gets at the end is also terrific.
Pretty fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, I like the clips like in the middle, like it would cut to two different shots without actually like moving the camera. It's like they cut out like, you know, 10 frames or something.
Oh, yeah.
It just
goes. Yeah.
Also, the three girls who go off in the car, bad friends, because they left their friend there with Sling Blade. Her last line in the film is gulp.
Especially because they
why she dressed like a cheerleader.
They tell him she's like a porn star or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, was it one of those pornos? It's like, here you go, Lee. Enjoy entertaining this guy while we steal his car.
Yeah.
Bye, friend.
All because the one girl wanted to drive that specific car.
Yeah.
And then never drove it.
Yeah.
She was like, she wanted to ride on the hood of that specific car.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it started with she wanted to drive it. And then once she was there, she was like, I want to do the
ship's mast.
Yeah.
Oh, I will say my favorite quote from these films does come from Death Proof. And it's the connecting bit of Death Proof and Planet Terror when they're in the hospital and you have the doctor's dad, sheriff, goes talking about why Kurt Russell killed these girls. Well, I guesstimate it's a sex thing.
My favorite line from this movie or these movies was in the Machete trailer. He's talking to his priest buddy, trying to like pull him in.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes like,
to Cheech Marin.
Yeah. And he goes like, thanks, bro. I mean, Padre.
Two very enjoyable scripts of bad writing.
But like purposefully bad writing,
I feel like. Yeah. Which is kind of how I get to the point of like, I mean, they miss the mark of being actual grindhouse films, but they're still enjoyable.
Well, I think this is a good time then to talk about some of that shit, right? Like you did a bigger dive into the actual grindhouse movies. So like, one, what movies did you watch? Two, which ones were best? And then three, you know, like what's your takeaway on that genre?
Since it's kind of a broad genre that's mostly, you know, best characterized by like low budget action horror. And I watched a couple different types of movies. So I watched a couple Pam Grier movies. I watched Coffee, where she is a shotgun toting nurse that goes around and kills bad people. Like she's just a nurse vigilante with a shotgun. Pretty cool. Then I watched a movie called Dead End Drive-In. This one's a post-apocalyptic movie where drive-in movies are used as jails for people. And so this kid and his girlfriend go there and like, they're kind of shitty people. And while they're watching the movie, the cops steal the tires off of his car so they can't leave. And it's in the middle of nowhere. So that's how these kids get stuck in there. And it's all an adventure of trying to like get all their stuff to get out. But it's like, as soon as he gets tires, somebody steals part of his engine. So it's like, oh, well,
it's like the surfer.
Yeah. Just always like, stuck there.
You definitely can't just walk.
Nope. Well, I watched Black Mama, White Mama, which is Pam Grier and some white lady.
I love how much Pam Grier is in all of these. Yeah. It's like so cool.
The lady from Archer.
Was she an Archer?
Yeah, she's one of the voices in Archer.
I'm going to continue on. They're like handcuffed together and they're escaping from prison, but they're like two completely different kinds of people. Like Pam Grier is a prostitute and...
different one.
Yeah.
Is the character name... it's Judy Grier is the actress. Yeah,
there we go.
And then Pam is the badass... character. I think we combined.
Who is not played by Judy Greer.
Yeah. Correct.
Judy Greer's Carol / Cheryl / Charlene.
Sorry, I
really woo! Outlaw Country.
Nailed it. It's a prostitute and a revolutionary like handcuffed together as they try to escape jail, but they have different motivations, so they have to work all that out.
That sounds great.
Yeah, these movies sound kind of awesome.
Dude, they're all fucking great.
That also makes me think of Crippled Masters again, but you know, I don't know to dive into that right now.
So after that, I went a little harder and I went to Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS. Mm-hmm. And that one is kind of like a combined story about a lot of the different horrors that were going on in the concentration camps of like medical experimentation and torture and all that, wrapped into something that's borderline a porno. And because every woman in this movie, you will see topless at some point. There's pretty good sex scenes in it. No pen, but you know, you get everything up to that point.
You got to earn that X rating.
Yeah, but that was pretty good. Lots of a very, very gory kind of booby filled movie. So,
speaking of Pam Grier, we should probably mention Jackie Brown, since the tie-in with Quentin Tarantino, right? Which came out in, I literally just looked at it, 90-something.
I was going to say early 90s, right?
97.
Oh, later than I thought.
So 10 years before this. But, you know, he's already got that kind of, he's already delved into, well, that's blaxploitation.
Blaxploitation.
But, you know.
Well, adjacent. All the exploitation films fit nicely into Grindhouse as well.
I like that there's a Canadian exploitation subgenre of that too.
What?
Oh. Yeah, Canucksploitation.
Well, Ilsa is a Canadian film.
There we go. Yeah. Perfect.
I got to claim I was watching foreign films that day.
That's right. It's an art house film. It's from another country.
It's okay. I can watch this.
All
it's
the art. German piece stuff. Art film.
Yeah. You know. But just watching all of them, like they have kind of certainly different styles and different feels, but they all kind of jive the same way. And like your acting is going to be pretty straightforward, like just line deliveries and people like making it to where they need to stand, like hitting all their marks and stuff like that.
That's the baseline.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of retakes.
Yeah,
no,
that's true. Film's expensive.
So, and in that, like, I can see like the way Rodriguez and Tarantino were emulating the styles, but you know, clearly there was just too much talent behind the work and too much money.
Going to the talent behind the work, getting Hollywood actors, good Hollywood actors, to act bad is its own special kind of hell.
Yeah,
I bet everybody had a lot of fun filming these.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm sure it was fun. I watching good actors try and be bad actors is just painful for me.
Yeah, I would have preferred if these were like nobodies.
Yeah. Like the most we got, the best bad acting that seems very authentic is the kid who blows his, shoots his head off, which is one of Rodriguez's kids, I believe.
Yeah, every kid is a terrible actor. They're so bad. You get like,
they don't even know who they own are.
One every generation turns out to be a good actor. Like, I mean, fuck, dude. Like, if I were a director, like 100%, I would put my kids in these things. Like, why not? Like, it's fun. You know, give it an opportunity for them to just have fun being silly. Like, you get to hang out with your dad. And
that's how you get like, a Jaden Smith.
Well, I mean, okay, so for every Jaden Smith, you get a...
What about the Apatow kids, right? Like, sure, they're in all of his movies, and they don't...
They seem normal.
They should be, what, teenagers by now,
probably,
right?
Yeah.
I haven't heard any crazy shit.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Jaden Smith is an outlier.
Sophia Coppola?
Yeah, she just is a shitty actor. She's a fine director.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, don't cast your shitty kids in fucking movies.
Cast other people's shitty kids in your shitty movies.
That's right. Yeah.
But at least make sure those kids can fucking act.
Yeah. I don't know. All in all for this, like, I felt pretty good about watching it, other than the time commitment, which was a stark reminder of the fact that we used to do two movies every single fucking episode.
I don't miss
that.
It was
like, wow, that was a lot that we put on our plate for 2.5 years or whatever it was.
It's
I think I will say my final thoughts on both these films. I enjoyed Death Proof a lot. I don't know that I'll ever watch Planet Terror again. It just does not instill joy in me at 41 as it did when I was 27.
I think I lean pretty heavily in the same direction. I like Death Proof a lot. I like the suspense aspect of it.
Mm.
The kind of film where it's like you see Mike the Hunter, and then you see the aspect of like the prey seeing Mike the Hunter. So it kind of flips the narrative in that on the split. I like the character that Kurt Russell gave. Overall, I like that movie a lot. And you know, I fucking love car chases and cool stunt work. So
it's definitely filmed better. It's a more beautiful film. Like I think it needed to not have the film grain garbage on it. I mean,
that,
both of them,
that filter could have been deleted from both films and it would have been better.
I think if I watch Death Proof again, I'm going to watch the first half, the actual like slasher film. And then I'm going to watch the last 20 minutes and I'm just going to cut out all of the second group of girls, like
they're hanging out at a coffee shop or whatever.
I don't need to know anything about these characters other than two of them are stunt women and they're gonna get in a chase later.
But Planet Terror, I liked enough. You know, I enjoy myself when I watch it. I don't think it's really that good, even for like what I think it's trying to be. But, you know, it's enjoyable and it's fun. It's got great special effects. And I love good practical effects, like popping the big, like, pustules on their faces and stuff.
Oh, so gross.
Oh, yeah. Greg Nicotero, by the way. Same guy that did Walking Dead and then actually took that show over. Like, kind of a famous makeup guy.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, you think about, like, when they're driving El Rey's truck, you know, to escape towards the end. And it's just like people getting slammed by it and turning into balloons, blowing up.
Does he call it the killdozer?
He does.
He does at one point. Yeah.
And it's
the helicopter, decapitated.
The helicopter
people,
is what
great.
I was going to mention. That was awesome.
Yeah. Also, that's not how physics work.
No.
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 The mini bike. Did we need the mini bike?
Oh my
god. Was there a payoff to
the
mini bike?
Oh my god. I don't care.
No, it was amazing. Just seeing him with his legs splayed out in like silhouette was incredible.
Doing the wheelie as he rides up.
That's just like, that's the kind of fun that I got from that one that like I wanted both of them to have more of.
Well, Planet Terror is definitely like a horror comedy or whatever. The comedy aspect is ingrained in it. It's intentional and it's meant to be there. And
I would much rather watch Planet Terror over Death Proof.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, I know. My vote doesn't count.
I think what I've learned from this process, from this episode, is I don't really care for either of these directors at this point in my life.
Fair. So I don't remember who it was. Somebody was talking about how terrible it is watching good actors be bad actors. It was Sean.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I like when I can see intentionality behind art and like watching these people clearly have a blast being bad actors. Like, it was just fun for me. It was like watching like a band on stage that's clearly having fun kind of thing. Right. I don't know. It just gives me the warm fuzzies.
You know, I think back to some of my favorite low budget like films. Ice Pirates
and just is
like,
a great one.
You have a couple of people who went on to do great things, but you have like the main guy. I have no idea who the main guy is, and he hams it up and he's cheesy and you know he's trying his fucking hardest and that's why it works.
See, I don't like that.
As opposed to Bruce Willis being like just kind of trying to act bad. I'm just like, this is just weird and just stilted in a way that isn't authentic and doesn't like, it seems a little try hard to be bad.
Yeah, I don't know. The Bruce Willis of it is hard because I think he's actually just kind of a shitty actor. But
I literally turned to Marcy as we were watching this and I was like, I miss Bruce Willis.
Mm.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, the classics are the classics, but like beyond the classics, it's like it's a bunch of dog shit.
Yeah. Well, I was just kind of also thinking about just kind of like what went down to them, you know?
Oh, totally. No, it's very sad. Yeah.
I mean, so much of his later output was just to try and make money for his family because he knew he was on borrowed time.
Well, let's end on that beautiful high note.
We miss you, Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
We love you. If you ever hear me say this, you're going to forget it immediately. Oh, I made myself sad.
I know. Next up, we got Astro Boy, which I have never seen before. So I'm kind of interested in this.
One of you watch like the old school like anime.
Oh, Astro Boy? We'll check some out. You know, I want to see some of it, like the inspiration behind a weird full 3D movie. Like why Nick Cage is the dad creator? We will find out.
This is my friend Tiffany's like favorite Nick Cage movie. So she's talked this up to me. So I'm excited to see it.
It'll be great. So yeah, thanks to our Sparkle buddies, Josh, Josie, Matt, Adam, Bill, Stuart, and Willow, and to our cage dancers, John, hi. And Freeman, Nathan, and Cameron.
I paid to be here.
That's true. You have. You've earned it. You've earned it by paying us. And special thanks to our for our intro music to Bill Panks. And thank you all for listening. And we'll be back in 2 weeks for more antics. Oh,